the Magna Carta. Carta, meaning quite literally charter, and Magna, meaning Japanese animation.
Oh, come on! A good lawyer couldn't win this case!
As is vampire law, we also have a local vampire here on the council this evening, Colin Robinson.
Hello.
How is it possible that you've never heard of O.J. Simpson?
Well, as I explained, I just awoke from a 22-year coma and was driven directly from the hospital to this courthouse.
You had no idea what tort reform meant, and when I asked you to explain the Sixth Amendment, you pled the Fifth.
I know my rights.
No, you don't. That's the problem.
Welcome to Opening Arguments, a podcast that pairs a comedian with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 577. I'm Thomas. That's Andrew. How are you doing, my friend?
I am fantastic, Thomas. How are you?
Not super thrilled. Today's episode is one of the tough ones. You know, the Republicans are really Republicaning in worse ways than ever, it feels like.
If we get to the wild card segment, that will be fun.
Well, you know what? That should be inspiration for us to get to that wild card segment.
All right.
So that we have a little bit of, you know, spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down. But let's get to our first segment here on these awful bills the Republicans are passing. Down. Down. So we're going to start with Florida. This is called the Don't Say Gay Bill. I got a question for you. Do they accept that wording of it? Whose version of the name of it is that? I just want to know, how far into the doom have we gotten? Have we gotten to the point where they're branding it as that, or is that us calling it that?
Oh, no, that is our branding. That is Lambda Legal. And it's really smart branding, because this is the most evil in how the bills have been crafted in terms of don't say the quiet part loud. And it is why I want to explain exactly what is in the bill, because the bill is designed so that Uncle Frank can say, well, it doesn't say that.
Like, right.
Yeah. Keep in mind, none of these bills are law as of the time that we're recording this. The Florida bill, House Bill 1557, and it is passed the full House, and it just is awaiting Governor DeSantis'
Uncle
signature.
Uncle Joey?
Yeah.
And no, sorry. Never
mind. Dave Coulet.
Yeah. I'm just surprised at them. That's all I'll say.
R.I.P. Bob Saget. We'll pour one out for you.
Yeah.
And again, obviously, I think DeSantis will approve this bill. Although, weirdly, prior to its passage, he did not come out and say, I am definitely going to vote for this. He said, I'm, you know, supportive of fighting wokeness and what have you. What does Bill 1557 do? It creates four operative sections that create new subsections of Florida Statute 1001.428C. And each of these is, as I suggested, kind of Orwellian in how they're written. So subsection two is, a school district may not adopt procedures or student support forms that prohibit school district personnel from notifying a parent about his or her student's mental, emotional, or physical health or well-being, or a change in related services or monitoring, or that encourage or have the effect of encouraging a student to withhold from a parent such information. School district personnel, I got one more sentence and then I'll explain. School district personnel may not discourage or prohibit parental notification of and involvement in critical decisions affecting a student's mental, emotional, or physical health or well-being. This is meant to target the practice of Florida schools, which allow school counselors to tell LGBTQ plus kids, hey, it's okay, you can come in and talk to us, even if you're afraid to come out to your parents. And the idea is now that having anxiety about being LGBTQ plus with parents who are unlikely to accept it is now a student's mental, emotional, or physical health or well-being. It almost certainly is. And this says, right, we can't adopt, schools cannot adopt any policy that prohibits or discourages school district personnel from notifying the parents about that kind of information.
So it's a little, we're just on the first thing here. It sounds a little like preemptive, sort of. It's like, don't stop us or someone else from doing a bad thing. But I guess it's slightly different than saying you must do a bad thing, or do I have that wrong?
So this section, and this is part of why this bill is so insidious, right? Mm-hmm. Is because it has multiple approaches that are designed to make public schools an unfriendly environment for LGBTQ folks. This part is designed to make the school guidance counselor's office less safe. Now, if you are fortunate enough as a kid to have a school counselor who is LGBTQ plus affirming, you're probably still going to be okay. They could still decide, well, this doesn't seem like a matter affecting a student's mental, emotional, or physical health or well-being. And they could probably say, you know, so therefore, I feel like I don't have to abide by any kind of school policy that says I should be informing the parents. And I think good people of goodwill will still do that. What this is going to change are counselors who have not made that clear and to whom kids come and say, hey, I'm worried about coming out to my parents because I'm gay and I don't have anybody that I can talk to. And counselors who are bigots will now have a justification to violate that trust. I don't want to say confidentiality because a student and a school counselor, they don't enjoy the same kinds of protections that, you know, an adult and a mental health professional share. But schools certainly encourage you to have that view. Mm-hmm. And this is a way of saying and a way of getting at that the counselor's office is not necessarily a safe space. If a counselor is an anti-gay bigot and they think that a child has come in and said something, you know, hey, I'm worried about coming out to my parents that I'm gay, they can make the determination that that is related to the student's mental, emotional, or physical health or well-being, because it is, and the school may not prohibit them from notifying the parents. So you are correct. This provision does not affirmatively, we've talked about like mandatory reporters in Texas.
Yeah.
It does not strike at the heart of LGBTQ plus advocates that are in the school system, but it empowers monsters.
Yeah. And I imagine, you know, a student might not necessarily know if their guidance counselor is a monster or not. It's probably not always easy to tell.
And they are unlikely to have access to mental health professionals in other way. I mean, you know, you typically get that through your parents when you're a kid. And if your parents are the ones you're afraid to go to, it's hard to see how that we can get kids an environment in which they can talk freely. So again, I agree with you by itself. Is this turn on the sirens? No, but it is indicative of what this bill is trying to do. So let's get to provisions 3 and 4, which state classroom instruction by school personnel or third parties on sexual orientation or gender identity may not occur in kindergarten through grade 3. Okay, that means no, Heather has two mommies. Or in a manner that is not age appropriate or developmentally appropriate for students in accordance with state standards. What are those state standards? Paragraph 4, student support services training developed or provided by a school district to school district personnel must adhere to student services guidelines, standards, and frameworks established by the State Department of Education. So these are the don't say gay provisions. Mm. This is the two things that they're going to implement. The first is, again, no mention of sexual orientation or gender identity to the youngest kids. And again, I get that the like James Lindsay anti-woke mob is like, oh, they're teaching six-year-olds how to be trans. No, what books like Heather Has Two Mommies do is normalize relationships that ought to be normalized.
Yeah, and that language was like age appropriate. Well, who decides that? Because I told my daughter when she was like, I don't know, 2, and I think, I think one of her classmates at daycare has two moms, I think, and it was like, oh yeah, some people have two moms and two dads. And I was like, that's fine.
You have scarred.
Go, I'm too young. Ah! For life. Like, yeah. Melted. No, I was like, oh, okay. It's fine. It's easy. Yeah. Done.
Yeah. Oddly enough, when you don't indoctrinate kids with stupid biases, they're like, yeah, sure. That seems totally fine.
Yeah, it's another thing they learn about the world. So age appropriate, I guess, is zero and up, I think.
So
as long as they're not -1, I think it's okay.
Those standards will be established as rules promulgated by the Florida Department of Education.
Ah.
And you can guess as to, right, that's an executive branch agency staffed by Ron DeSantis. So it's pretty obvious.
21 and older. You'll be able to go to war and smoke, but not be able to learn about gay people. That'll be, that's my guess.
And look, Heather Has Two Mommies is, I mean, that was a... that was out when Alex was a child, right? Huh. There are materials that attempt for young kids to normalize the great variety of relationships that are out there. And, you know, this is a way of saying, no, we don't want to deal with any of that. So it is, we call that instruction in sexual orientation or gender identity.
Well, and not only that, I mean, maybe it's because I'm here in woke California or something, but like, I hope we're on the next phase of that, which is you don't even need the book that's like, some people have two moms. You just have characters in stuff that have that, and it's normal. That, I think that's kind of where we are now, actually, at least in the stuff that my kids consume. It's just, instead of being a special case that you need to make your kids aware of, it's just another background thingy.
Yeah.
Which I think is even better, hopefully.
And
more progress.
Could you imagine? And look, like, it is the same sin to the fundamentalist Christian activists that are pushing this. But could you imagine if we had to push at the elementary school, kindergarten level materials that were like, well, you know, divorced kids are weird. You know, children of divorced parents are weird. Everybody would instantly understand, like, well, that's a terrible thing to do to kids, because you're going to have kids in the class who have divorced parents. And now all of a sudden, everybody's going to be like, well, you're weird now. The fifth section, the fourth section, paragraph 5, is the last operative part of this bill. And it is, at the beginning of the school year, each school district shall notify parents of each healthcare service offered at their student's school and the option to withhold consent or decline any specific service. Parental consent to a healthcare service does not waive the parent's right to access his or her student's educational or health records or to be notified about a change in his or her student's services or monitoring as provided by this paragraph. That seems very clearly to me to be an effort to prevent schools from handing out condoms without letting parents object to it. Schools don't offer that many healthcare services.
I don't think I ever got any condoms from my school, but
lots of schools have that.
Damn. I just had to try to buy them really awkwardly at a gas station.
that trip through the 7-Eleven where you're I want.
Well, but you're not from a small town. It's a different experience, man. You're like, please be knowing I know. Please be knowing I know.
Well, in any event, like, condoms should be, seriously, they should be like handed out on the street. It should be like, you know, they're like newspaper boxes.
Yeah.
You should just be able to open up a box and take out a condom whenever you want. But anyway, that is the text of the Don't Say Gay bill. I am pleased that it has mobilized opposition. I am pleased that GLAAD and Lambda Legal have done a good job in parsing through, you know, what legalese, you know, you might like just look at that on the surface and go, well, it doesn't say don't say gay.
Yeah.
But that's effectively what it is. It is going to ban discussions as not being, quote, age appropriate. And it bans any kind of discussion to youngest children, which again plays into what the right wing thinks the woke mob is doing as opposed to what we're actually doing. A version of this has been introduced as Georgia Senate Bill 613. So these things proliferate. When they pass, they get replicated in other jurisdictions. And that's terrifying, but maybe less terrifying than the next two if you're up for it. Okay. Idaho House Bill 675 has been voted out of committee It is headed to a full vote in the Idaho State House. So there is still time to oppose this one. It amends Section 18-1506B of the Idaho Code. And I haven't seen this reported elsewhere. That's the provision that criminalizes female clitoridectomy, female genital mutilation in Idaho. It is a felony punishable by up to life in prison. And this individual who proposed this bill wants to amend that section and say, oh yeah, you know what else is genital mutilation? And again, thanks to our listeners on this, not just gender reassignment surgery, but quote, administering or supplying the following medications that induce, and again, this is the language of the statute, profound morphologic changes in the genitals of a child or induce transient or permanent infertility. And they are described as one, puberty blocking medication to stop or delay normal puberty. Put a pin in that. Two, supraphysiological doses of testosterone to a female. Or three, supraphysiological doses of estrogen to a male. So let's work backwards through that. That supraphysiological is just a big fancy word meaning more than is just what is produced naturally by your body. So estrogen treatments, the first estrogen treatment to a trans woman, a trans girl, is considered the equivalent of female genital mutilation under this bill. Same thing, administering testosterone to a trans male, to a trans boy. And the entirely reversible use of puberty blockers are considered, right, delaying the onset of normal puberty. I need to speak to this for a second because listeners to the show know that my son is severely ADHD. I've talked about that, how our medical interventions really have enabled him to live and thrive and you know, live his best life. One of the very real, very well documented, there's a Poulton 2016 Poulton et al. Peer-reviewed paper. It's well known that the, particularly in boys, the standard treatment regimen of stimulants, right, including Ritalin, can delay the onset of puberty in boys. And again, without, you know, getting too much into my kid's history, like that probably happened. My kid was a little older when that happened. And by the way, that was a side effect we discussed with him, right, as a child. Again, you got to get, you have to get advice from medical professionals and parents or whatever, but we discussed that. It was not even close, right, to, well, obviously I will run that risk because, you know, the meds help me function and help me get through daily life. The idea that that is child abuse, and again, this bill, that those provisions, it does not amend, it adds to the definition, but does not amend the punishment, which again is a felony punishable by up to life in prison. That's what these people think helping trans kids is.
It's just unbelievable. What does one say? I don't even, I mean, it's Handmaid's Tale. It really is. I miss the times where I used to think that stuff wasn't plausible.
It gets worse because they've obviously talked to anti-trans doctors and other activists who were like, oh, yeah, all right, well, you know, you got to keep in mind, you're going to get all sorts of problems. So there is a health exception in the bill, but then the health exception contains an exception to the exception. And it says, except that a medical intervention that results in the impairment and mutilation of the reproductive organs and parts of a child, and keep in mind, and I know I'm sorry for using this language, that's the language I just defined to you. That is including administering testosterone, estrogen, puberty blockers, is never necessary to the health of the child on whom it is performed if it is for the sole purpose of attempting to change or affirm the child's perception of the child's sex if that perception is inconsistent with the child's biological sex. So, but again, notice the way in which that's written. That concedes gender dysphoria is a real thing. It's the child's perception of their own gender.
Right.
And then if that's inconsistent with the child's biological sex.
I'm not a doctor, but doesn't this really screw over people who are born intersex?
Great question. Again, they have tried to block that out because they've added new subsection 6 that says the bill shall not apply to a child with external biological sex characteristics that are ambiguous and irresolvable, such as a child born having 46 chromosomes, XX chromosomes with virilization, XY chromosomes with under-virilization, or with both ovarian and testicular tissue, or when a physician is otherwise diagnosed a disorder of sexual development in which the physician has determined through genetic testing that the child does not have the, quote, normal sex chromosome structure for a male or female. And again, I'm quoting from the legislation here. I don't obviously endorse any of this language. But yeah, no, they thought of that one already, Thomas, and just wrote intersex out of it because they knew that this was an indefensible line to take. So keep an eye on, again, not the law right now, but Idaho House Bill 675 has passed, made it out of committee, is working its way to the full state house.
This show is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Folks, I think it's a great idea to always keep learning new things, new skills. That's why you listen to this show. We learn so much from Andrew each and every week. I learn more about the law, the ethics, the bar exam questions. If you're always learning, it keeps you sharp, just like ZipRecruiter. Their AI is always learning. So if you're hiring, their AI gets better and faster at finding the right candidates for all your roles. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OA. ZipRecruiter uses its powerful technology to find and match the right candidates up with your job. Then it proactively presents these candidates to you. You can easily review these recommended candidates and invite your top choices to apply for your job, which encourages them to apply faster. It's no wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site in the U.S. based on G2 ratings. And now you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/OA. That's ZipRecruiter.com/OA. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. This show is brought to you by Masterworks. I saw an article on art auction prices, and I cannot wrap my head around the numbers I'm seeing. $71 million for an Andy Warhol painting, $103 million for Picasso, $110 million for Basquiat. You might want something like that in your portfolio, but like, how can you afford $71 million? I don't know if we have a listener who can afford $71 million or even the, you know, the higher budget $110 million for Basquiat. If we do, you know, go to our Patreon. But if that's not you, a way you can get your hands on that kind of asset without that kind of money is Masterworks. Masterworks is the first investing platform in the world enabling you to invest in blue chip art. It's an asset that's outpaced the S&P 500 by 164% from 1995 to 2021. That's a long period of time. That's kind of a proven record. And it's made affordable through fractional ownership. Because with Masterworks, you can buy shares representing an investment in famous artworks. And if you go to masterworks.art/opening, you can start investing today, joining over 350,000 other members. That's masterworks.art/opening. See important Regulation A disclosures at masterworks.io/CD. One more time, that's masterworks.art/opening.
As we go down the increasingly unlikely spectrum, the third bill, this is just a dude has proposed this. Okay, this has gotten a lot of attention, but has not gotten out of committee yet. I would think it would have no chance of getting out of committee, but
who knows?
See the previous two segments we just did. So this is Missouri House Bill 1677, which bans aiding and abetting anyone getting an abortion, quote, regardless of where the abortion is or will be performed. So that is the even out of state. It uses the same Texas House Bill 8 civil enforcement vigilantism mechanism with $10,000 in statutory damages, defines aiding or abetting an abortion as mifepristone and misoprostol, which are the that together, that's the abortion pill regimen. Mifepristone is RU486. So yes, the implication is pharmacy in Illinois sells a woman in Missouri, the abortion pill could then be sued by anybody, by private vigilantes in Missouri for aiding and abetting an abortion. It's terrible and horrible, and I would hope it can't get out of committee, but...
Let's say that does go into law. Is this where we could start seeing states really doing battle with one another? You know, extraditing and being like, no, I'm not going to do that.
You could, and I think this is the reason behind, well, I think there are multiple reasons behind using the vigilante civil enforcement mechanism, right? Because it's very, very clear that if this were a criminal offense, that you cannot make criminal behavior in Illinois subject to prosecution in Missouri. But you can establish civil liability, you know, for businesses that choose to do business in Missouri, right? Again, you know, we've used this example. We have a bunch of podcast listeners in Missouri. We're probably subject to personal jurisdiction in the state of Missouri if we got sued there. And so, by the way, that's not an admission for purposes of Opening Arguments Media LLC. But yeah, so it complicates the question in a way that the answer to the question should be, don't leave your criminal enforcement to vigilantes and bounty hunters. But yeah, it makes it a harder question.
Makes what a harder? Sorry, my question is, so can state, so if California, let's say California, me in California or some business, we start sending people the abortion pills that they can't get. Does California have any way to protect me if it wanted to?
So California could then pass a law that says all liability in connection with interstate shipments of mifepristone and misoprostol, you'd frame it larger than that. You would say, you know, all liability in connection with women's health services, you know, shall be adjudicated under the laws of the state of California. That's what I would pass. And then you're in a Missouri court, right? And you would just argue, we've talked about this before, you would argue conflict of laws rules. You would say, hey, I'm a California law. I prescribe this I'm a California corporation. We prescribe this under California law. We shipped it out of our California office. And the statute says California law applies to these kinds of disputes. And then the Missouri court would be obligated to apply California law.
Wow.
Even though to that bounty case, which would then dismiss out the case. There are a lot of ifs in that chain.
Yeah. Right?
So I love the question because, you know, you're sort of thinking five steps ahead and saying, if this turns out to be the new, you know, sort of Handmaid's Tale landscape, what can we do to protect people?
Yeah.
And the answer is we do not have to give up the fight just because Missouri has passed a terrible law. And so if this... Let's hope that this doesn't pass.
Yeah.
But if it does, I will do an episode on what we need to be passing in blue states to make sure that that people don't run afoul of this.
Fingers crossed that it doesn't pass, but I don't know. I'll try not to yell, Andrew, but you know, got all the... Maybe I should, you know? I mean, protecting gay and trans youth is probably worth a little yelling. There's just something uniquely horrible to the fact that this is so obviously a political ploy to get people focused on culture war issues that they've riled people up about using Fox News and other outlets and all that, and that it's so obviously just a way to get their base motivated, but it also still has these real and terrible impacts. You know, it's such a weird kind of dichotomy to be stuck in where it's like, okay, yes, this is just some bullshit that you're doing to score political points using people as a football, but people are still being used as a football, as you've kind of said here. It's truly horrifying. And also, people used to argue during, I don't know, every election recently that it's not enough to just not be a Republican. It's not enough. And I'm just going to go ahead and say, yes, it is enough to just not be a Republican. I think that is enough, actually, and it's not... You know, it's not where anybody wants to be. It's not like I would love to be in a position where just saying you're a Democrat or just loosely speaking, being a Democrat is enough to vote for you. But it actually is true. Like when the other side is, I don't know, Handmaid's Tale, it actually is enough of a campaign promise to be like, I'm not that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like if I'm getting picked up by an Uber and the driver, I asked the driver, like, what do you stand for? What's your deal? And he's like, well, I'm not a serial killer. And the other guy that's going to pick you up is a serial killer. I'm not like, well, yeah, sure. But being not a serial killer is not enough. It's like, no, that is enough. Just take that Uber. Like, that's the position we're in. We're stranded somewhere. We've got two Ubers. One is a serial killer and one is a guy saying I'm not. By the way, that's not even the situation we're in because Democrats do great things, as we've seen. But like, even if you, that's your view of the situation, that some, you know, centrist Democrat is like not worth voting for, it actually is enough because we need to prevent this harm. We need to prevent bills like this from being passed. We
but
have
Thomas,
to.
If I ride with enough serial killers for Uber, then eventually, yeah, like Uber will be overthrown and replaced with a socialist system to drive people around. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. As long as we're on that path, how about we reinforce? And again, I cannot say this strongly enough. Democrats do not sponsor or vote for any of the bills that we just talked about, right? These are Republican proposals.
I wasn't finished with that thing. I just had one more bit. Apologies.
Please do. No. Go,
so the only way to round this out is, by the way, if you want to get out of this situation, contrary to Andrew's facetious plan of just let yourself get serial killed enough times, that doesn't work. If you want to get out of this situation, which we all should want to get out of, the only way to do it is to completely eliminate Republicans' viability in elections. That's the only way. The way to have good things again and to get better and better, more progressive candidates is to get us out of this. We have to break this cycle of letting Republicans win. We can't. We have to eliminate them from the possibility landscape electorally. And then what we get is, you know, AOC versus Joe Biden. Then we could be like, oh, yeah, let's vote for AOC. That's awesome. She's way better. But until we get to that point, we have to just vote Republicans out. It's the only option. Sorry about that. Okay, onward.
Yeah, and again, let's drive that point home by talking about how Republicans are stealing elections. And oh, I got two little stories here that you need to know about. The first is, and again, remember, the only electoral fraud there is are Republicans trying to prove election fraud. So yeah, we just got a 13-count indictment against Tina Peters in Mesa County, Colorado. And she was the she is, of course, running for Secretary of State. She and her deputy, Belinda Nicely, were both subject of a 13-count indictment. She was the clerk and recorder of Mesa County, Colorado. She believes in the big lie. And in connection with that, there was a what is called a trusted build. Okay. So Colorado using Dominion voting systems for their electronic voting machines. And so the system is set to come in and be installed, and then you upgrade the software and everything else. And so the way in which the Secretary of State office does this is you have the trusted build installed under video camera, so that members of the public that are interested in the process can then watch that video from start to finish. And you can see, oh, look, okay, here's how this Dominion voting system was installed. And here's them clicking the button to, you know, start updating the software. Here's the software saying 100% installed. Here's them disconnecting it from the modem. Here's the, at no point do they call Venezuela, right? Well, in order to prove that Dominion systems are fraudulent, what Tina Peters did was got a fraudulent account. She said, oh, I got a temp in my office who's going to come in. Turned out not to actually be a person. Somebody they thought was going to be, I think, a stooge, like, but they wound up not hiring this guy. And so they just used this person's badge to come in and shut off the cameras. And and the guy's name, by the way, was Gerald Wood. Tina Peters says, hey, I've got a temp employee, Gerald Wood. I need you to give me an access badge. They get the fake access badge. They come in on May 17th. They turned off the surveillance cameras.
Wow.
Which then stayed off throughout the entire build process. They hacked into the software and
Wait, who hacked into the software?
Tina Peters. hacked into the software. Well, you know, I mean, had access to it. But, you know, what I mean is used the secured access badges to access the software. And then as a result, published the passwords to access the Mesa County voting systems on right-wing websites, including Gateway Pundit.
In order to increase election security.
Yeah, in order to, yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Tina Peters, of course, showed up at the MyPillow guys nonsense conference. And so all of a sudden, like, Colorado Secretary of State employees were like, you do know that, like, our passwords are out here on right-wing nut job sites, and you know, the goddamn MyPillow guy is saying, like, see, this is how easy it is to get into the Colorado election system. Well, yeah, it is when you sabotage it by people who are trying to prove the thing that they have then set up.
Yeah.
So, good news, 13 felonies. Attempting to influence a public servant, conspiracy to commit criminal impersonation, criminal impersonation, failure to comply with the requirements of the Secretary of State, that's a misdemeanor. Violation of duty, that's also a misdemeanor. And then first degree official misconduct of the job, and also identity theft in connection with the fake badge for Gerald Wood, who appears to have backed out of the system. So that's the 13 count indictment against Tina Peters and her clerk, her assistant, Belinda Nicely. So just a reminder, election fraud is perpetrated by Republicans when they're trying to prove that our systems are not safe.
But you said so they didn't actually steal an election, though.
No, they did. This was all in connection with the setup of the voting systems for the 2022 election. Yeah. So we at least caught them, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. Look, it's so bad these days. I don't know, Andrew. The end of the story could be that they stole the election. I don't know.
It could be, fortunately, not. But because voter fraud is such a big problem, the Florida State Legislature has now passed. This has gone under the radar, and I'm really glad that we're reporting on it. The Don't Say Gay bill has gotten a lot of attention. Florida has passed Senate Bill 524, which creates an Election Day goon squad. It funds it with $2.5 million and 25 employees. Florida SB 524, the first part, oh, by the way, just like as an incidental, like mustache twirling part, prohibits any jurisdiction in Florida, right? Any county or city from using ranked choice voting. So that's a nice kind of like, you know, wind up there. It says a ranked choice voting method that allows voters to rank candidates for an office in order of preference and has ballots cast be tabulated in multiple rounds following the elimination of a candidate until a single candidate attains a majority may not be used in determining the election or nomination of any candidate to any local, state, or federal elective office in the state. And again, I know you're sick of hearing us say this, but like, this is black and white proof that what the right wing wants is for you to split your vote voting for a third party candidate, right?
Yeah.
The clear solution is ranked choice voting. Then we're all happy, right? Go ahead, vote the socialist one, the Democrat two, and the Republican ninth, and we're all happy. Prohibiting ranked choice voting and then encouraging demoralized folks on the left to stay home when a compromise or centrist candidates get in is their strategy. It's black and white.
As you say, we've said this a lot, but it's funny because I've had literally this interaction, I don't know, 20 times where I post or say something that's like, hey, sorry, kind of what I said earlier. Situation we're in is we just have to get Republicans out. That's the only choice. And then inevitably some of the comments are, we need ranked choice voting. And it's like, I agree. How do we get that? Is it by letting Republicans win and then they pass bills like this that say never any ranked choice voting? Is that the way we do it? Or do we get Republicans the F out of office, which was what I already said anyway? So what is this comment adding? That happens frequently.
And when they do, by the way, it is Democrats in blue jurisdictions that pass RCV statutes.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
exactly. Couldn't be more clear.
The second thing that the goon squad does is, this is the actual goon squad, it creates, it's not called the goon squad, although I think they should.
That would be the only redeeming quality of it. Yeah.
To wear that.
Hired goons.
Hired goons, yeah. You just don't get the kind of personal touch.
Yeah.
It is called the Office of Election Crimes and Security. Is created within the Department of State, and the purpose of the office is to aid the Secretary of State in completion of his or her duties under the statute, which means receiving and reviewing notices and reports generated by government officials or any other person regarding alleged occurrences of election law violations or election irregularities in the state, initiating independent inquiries and conducting preliminary investigations into allegations of election law violations or election irregularities within the state. And then, I'm not going to read all of the rest of this. You can. I will link it in the show notes. Again, it's Florida SB 524. But basically says that the secretary shall appoint a director of this Office of Election Crimes and Security, shall be based state capital, Tallahassee, shall employ non-sworn investigators to conduct any investigations, and the positions and resources necessary for the office to accomplish its duties shall be established through and subject to the legislative appropriations process. This means that something that has long been a voter suppression tactic, we've talked about this, the basis for a 25-year consent decree came out of election fraud in Pennsylvania, in which the Republicans had a voter task force complete with these, like, you know, fake armbands kind of wander around sites and look like an official presence to try and deter folks from voting. That used to be a thing that you faked and will now be a thing that Florida can have. They can just send out any of these 25, and again, they're 25 full-time employees. They can use non-sworn investigators, that is, independent contractors, wearing the badge of election crimes and security under the State Department in connection with this election starting in 2022. If you think that's a great idea, you're probably not listening to the show.
Yeah.
The law also, I should add, greatly increases penalties in connection with election behaviors that used to be okay. So, for example, and again, I am not a fan. We've talked about this on the show. I'm not a fan of ballot harvesting, which is it can be used to prop up, can be used to increase Democratic numbers, particularly in the South, in black churches. We'll go through and like gather together all of their constituent, you know, all of their parishioners' ballots, and then, you know, kind of make sure that everybody is voting the way that everybody wants. I'm not a fan of that, right? I think it's perfectly okay to prohibit ballot harvesting. I think we should have exceptions when it's outside of actual jurisdictions, right? Like, so I think like ballot harvesting is the only thing you can do on like Native American reservations, for example. Right. Right. Yeah. So, okay, I'm not a fan of ballot harvesting outside of that, but that used to be permissible in Florida. In the last bill in 2020, it was made a misdemeanor. It is now a felony punishable by $50,000 and or 5 years in prison.
Why not the death penalty? Just keep going with it. We will start to see those, I think.
We will. I think that's right. So all of that, I think, kind of falls under the general category of Republicans don't want you to vote. They want to make it harder to vote. They want to pretend that there's fraud where there isn't, and they want to use fraud as a basis for these draconian kinds of bills.
They also just need to signal that they love Trump and believe he won, even though they know he didn't. It's that, too. We talked about this in Florida. It's unclear that this only hurts Democrats and helps Republicans. Like, it might not be true, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it certainly mega churches use ballot harvesting.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So I agree with you.
Today's show is brought to you by Business Wars, a Wondery podcast. In 2007, two roommates rented out an air mattress to strangers to earn extra money. Their little experiment turned into Airbnb and exploded into a worldwide phenomenon with rentals in over 100,000 cities. But one of those cities didn't want anything to do with the startup, New York City. Business Wars is a podcast from Wondery that examines the world's biggest company rivalries and how the outcomes of these battles shape what we buy and how we live. In the new season, Airbnb versus New York City, Hear how the battle with the city became a symbol of the struggle between startups and regulators. As Airbnb hosts realized how lucrative this side hustle could be, it quickly expanded to include entire apartments, luxury units, and even castles. Soon, real estate speculators were snapping up properties left and right to rent out on Airbnb, but rather than make money for regular people as it promised, Airbnb began to limit New York's already short supply of affordable housing. Angry renters complained so much that New York City officials decided to do something about it. But Airbnb wasn't going down without a fight. Definitely check out Business Wars from Wondery. It is a fascinating story. And that dynamic of a big city versus a tech company, that's played out many times and probably will play out many more times. So listen to Business Wars on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or you can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
All right, can I please do something happy?
Wild card!
Yeah! What? A lot of bad news there, but why don't you bring us home? We got the wild card. We earned it. The people have earned it for listening to this horrible bad news. What's the good news wild card?
The good news is cause number DC-22-02562, the Commission for Lawyer Discipline versus Sidney Powell, filed in the 116th Judicial District, Dallas County, Texas. Yeah, Sidney Powell's going to be disbarred, and boy, it could not happen to a nicer insurrectionist. I'm going to link in the show notes. Great stuff here. Things that I didn't quite know, which is the basis in Texas were complaints filed by 10 different folks. And those 10 folks included Jocelyn Benson, the Michigan Secretary of State, Gretchen Whitmer, the Michigan Governor, Dana Nessel, the Michigan Attorney General, right? So this is in connection with that referral from Judge Parker sanctions. But also concerned citizens who were lawyers. So Paula Carey Goldman is just a Virginia lawyer, seems to be a concerned citizen. Same thing, Adam Charles Reddick, Janet Louise Lackman. Now, she's actually in Texas. But yeah, if you've ever wondered when we've sort of made a call to action and said, if you know, if you have direct knowledge of X lawyer, you know, committing Y impropriety, go ahead and fill out a complaint.
Yeah.
It seems to be taken seriously. So that's the first kind of bit of good news. The second are the bases here, and one of which we've talked about briefly, but it is so egregious that it's worth mentioning again. So the reasons for arguing that this case should go forward against Sidney Powell are, one, Sidney Powell had no reasonable basis to believe that the lawsuits she filed were not frivolous and they violated Rule 11. That's clear.
Yep.
Two, she unreasonably delayed lawsuits, right? Expanded out the proceedings by refusing to dismiss them out, even when the relief that could be granted was moot. I mean, she filed an appeal in the Michigan case after Joe Biden was president. So, you know, that she was sanctioned in the Eastern District of Michigan by Judge Peters, right? So those are three really good arguments. And then the fourth is in the Pearson versus Kemp litigation that she filed in Georgia, she attached a certificate from the Georgia Secretary of State that was altered. And I don't know if you remember this, but this was actually mentioned as one of the bases for Dominion's claim of defamation against Sidney Powell. So it shows up on page 37 of the Dominion versus Sidney Powell lawsuit. But here's what Sidney Powell did. And again, reminder, we are not working with the best and the brightest here. Sidney Powell says in her complaint that Governor Kemp, Secretary of State Raffensperger, rushed through the purchase of Dominion voting machines. And she can prove that there's a conspiracy because the authorization by the Secretary of State to use Dominion voting systems was undated. They just left this big thing hanging out there so that you could get it through at any one point in time. And, you know, that proves that the fix was in. There's only one problem. And by the way, the link is in the show notes. You can click on this false, fraudulent, altered document now. It is on defendingtherepublic.org/Georgia/court-filings. Okay. So you click on it. It's Exhibit 6. And it says, "It is my opinion that this kind of voting system and its components can safely be used by the electors of this state in all primaries and elections as provided by the law." And she says, "See, look, it's undated. They just snuck it in there. Except that the original was dated, had the little official seal, I hereby witnesseth my hand and seal as of this, you know, and has the date on it and has the little like gold leaf thing around it. And she just used like something like Microsoft Paint to white it out. And and I'm not kidding. She only whited out like part of it. Like there's this red. Oh my God.
She didn't even do like a good job. She didn't click the larger brush size on MS Paint to make sure she got it all.
There's still like a red wavy line that like is part of the top of the seal. Like that's how they figured this out. Again, we're not dealing with our best and brightest here.
Yeah.
I cannot link the original because the original from the Secretary of State's office now gets an error 1020 access denied when you click on it. But you can find it on the Wayback Machine on the internet. It's stupendously obvious that all she's done is just tried to white out the date and then said, see, look, it doesn't have any date. And look, when you cross the line from making idiotic arguments to altering documents is where you lose the ability to just say, you know, the John Eastman, like, well, admittedly, I thought no just, Supreme Court
zealous,
justice would vote for this.
Zealous right? advocacy over here.
Yeah. Two, I have perpetrated a fraud on the court. And so she's alleged to violate five different provisions of the Model Rules of Professional Conduct, 301. Don't bring a case unless you have a reasonable belief that there's a non-frivolous basis for doing so. 302, don't unreasonably increase the cost or other burdens or unreasonably delay the resolution of a matter. 303, don't make a knowingly false statement. 303A5, shall not knowingly use evidence you know to be false. That's a real problem for her now. And the catch-all 804A3 shall not engage in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. The request is for an order of professional misconduct. And yes, that can and will include disbarment here. So,
Sidney Powell, strong prediction. Your prediction
will not be
predicting
a lawyer much longer.
Disbarment.
I am predicting disbarment.
Wow. Arguably, she hasn't been a lawyer at all that I've seen, but officially. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, good to go out on some good news. Thanks for that wild card.
And thank you!
And more good news, let's thank our top patrons, our Hall of Famers, our all-time greats on patreon.com/law. The second quintile. It works for all of them, I guess.
Yeah, it sure does.
It's not as good as the final, but still. and I think it's your turn.
It's a quintile.
Yeah. I think it's your turn to thank our top patrons, our Hall of Famers, who, by the way, are getting all the goodies. The ad-free episodes, the early episodes, the Lot Awful Movies coming at you real soon. That may have already been recorded as you're hearing this. I'm so excited. So, Andrew, start us off.
Yeah, thank you to Sean McGovern, to OA Chicago Live Show. You bring the law talking, guys. I'll bring the malort. Oh, my God, that's gross stuff.
Yeah, I don't know about that last part, but we're definitely doing that at some point.
You do that, I will do one. But not one getting, from every person. But yeah, I'll do one shot of
live shows.
I think we should be. Yeah.
I think we're close.
The Fat Jedi eating cake and drinking Emperor's Brewery beer in the Death Star canteen. Zach Bloom, support Decarcerate, working to end mass incarceration in Arkansas. DecarcerateAR.org. I keep my candy in a jar, not in a desk, and I keep that jar sealed tightly. We should do the same with the Senate. Tell Morgan Gatam's son I have. Ray, Pizza School the Corgi, and Conrad Michaels have never been in the same room at the same time. Coincidence? If our top donor was a Corgi, that would just, all the constellations would be in harmony. Legal is so handsome. Do take DNS advice from our live streams. The Smiths, praise be unto Hamilton. Crazy Animal Lady has given up on changing her Patreon name. Just take my money. We will, but you know, you can still change it. The at canonical debate could help people get back onto Team Facts. Check out the proposal. Budget Botanist on Fiverr suspects you all killed your pandemic plant purchases. I forgive you. Yeah, well, stock up. Yeah, replenish those. Please offer any suggestions for a podcast that would read my Patreon name weekly, asking for a friend. Academic Dispute R. Instant target. Creature must block this turn if able. You may have it gain reach. Learn.
Well, the name of the card seems to be Academic Dispute. I think that's usually how that works, but I don't know the card. Sorry.
All right. And Fred Gruthies,
And thank you, too. Sparkle Donkey Tequila is 100% guaranteed by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres. And the next thing I will say is false. What? Oranis. The doctrine of daylight savings time is our deference. Yeah, no kidding. One Smart Cookie sent cutters. Listener Thomas F., is anyone else concerned that in about a year, Republicans could permanently take control? Yeah, no, that's we're quite concerned about that. Happy birthday to the fat Jedi drinking at Emperor's Brewery beer. GDT says, everyone knows that the police can't arrest you without your, page 2 of 2, consent. Maritime laws, freedom menu. Benghazi and the Buttery Males, not a Last Week Tonight producer. Le Doux, Le Bien Fabuleux, Jennifer Chakowski. Supreme Court justices should have 18-year term limits, and so should Conrad Michaels. Not likely. It's my last shout-out with testicles. Wow. Going to the vet and getting tutored. What? Tutored? I think, oh, neutered, probably, I best. Yeah. On March 31st. Is that, that must be a dog one, I hope. Edgy Veggie, Evie Huntington, Harvard alum, no hood. We have legal advice. If you have coin, do not take legal advice from a coin. And John Brown did nothing wrong. Thank you so much to our Hall of Famers.
Sometimes you eat the bar, and sometimes the bar, well, he eats you.
And now it's time for T3BE. Thomas tries to be ethical. Answer time. Let's see. Did I make my first ethical misstep?
All right. So, Thomas, this was attorney represented the wife in an acrimonious dispute. Divorce proceeding, and then the husband, through his lawyer, makes a settlement offer. The settlement offer says, okay, I'm going to give you a potential settlement that is better than any potential award that you could get from the case going to judgment, but you have to agree that you can't use this lawyer in any future proceeding brought by either of us to modify or enforce the provisions of our settlement decree. The wife says, yeah, all right, well, what the hell do I care? I want to get my money, and, you know, one lawyer's as good as the next. And her attorney says, well, yeah, this is probably in your interest. And so says, yeah, go ahead, accept it. The attorney recommended to the wife that she accept the offer. Was it proper for the wife's attorney to recommend that the wife accept the settlement offer? You narrowed it down to one yes answer. Yes, because the attorney reasonably believed that it was in the wife's best interest to accept the proposed settlement. Or that's D, the main answer. Your fallback, no answer. No, because the proposed settlement would restrict the attorney's right to represent the wife in the future. And you said, well, I think I'm going to go with D. B is a fallback if there's some rule that I've never heard of that says you can't do that. Well, as Thomas, as it turns out, is your first one wrong. There is, in fact, a rule that prevents you from doing that. It is Rule 5.6 of the Model Rules of Professional Conduct, which says a lawyer shall not participate in offering or making B, an agreement in which a restriction on the lawyer's right to practice is part of the settlement of a client controversy.
Yeah.
And as soon as you start thinking about it, you realize why that's in there. So imagine, you know, that you have gotten to the bottom of repetitive, terrible conduct by a business against your first client. And, you know, the XYZ Corp is like, all right, fine, we're going to pay off your guy. In fact, we're going to pay him more than he could get at trial. But you have to not bring any more of these cases, Thomas Smith. We're done. You got us over a barrel. We'll deal with Andrew Torres. We'll deal with any other lawyer. But God help us, not Thomas Smith. And the idea there is that would be an unjust distribution of the results, right? Like, you don't get to file your cases against XYZ Corp, and client A gets a windfall, but clients B, C, and D would not get quality representation down the line.
Well, no, it just said he can't represent the wife, though.
Yeah, well, that's why the rule in general is you can't restrict your future right to practice.
Oh, okay.
The reason for not wanting to restrict the future right to practice, I think, is that...
Yeah. You know, I get that. That makes sense. But I think, you know, the fact that it was very narrowly tailored to you can't represent the wife in any further thing, it just was like, well, I don't really see how that's a thingy, but it's a rule I didn't know about.
It's a rule you didn't know about.
I was very close to guessing. So it was B, though, right?
Yep, it was.
Yeah,
in fact,
I was
B.
Very close. Very close to guessing B. Probably should have pulled the trigger on that. Well,
yeah,
am I disbarred? Am I Sydney Powell?
No, I think there's a good faith basis for thinking that. No, like you analyzed the question exactly perfectly. You know, what more could you ask for?
Yeah, it's true. Probably just getting it right would be the...
Well, that,
yeah.
That is a thing that'd you be could the ask
one
for.
More thing. Yeah. Well, let's find out who, for the first time in show history, is more ethical than I am. Who is this week's big winner?
All right, Thomas. And this week we have two winners. I couldn't choose between the two of them. One is a lawyer, our friend Shelley Henry, who writes very straightforwardly, it's B. Never give up your right to represent a client. They settle their cases. You do not. Exactly right from the lawyer's point of view. Also, dinosaur ducky non-lawyer who writes, this question makes perfect soap opera sense. The reason for the divorce is infidelity between the wife and, you guessed it, her attorney. So now the husband and adulterous wife are agreeing to steal one of the lawyer's sticks? Come on, man. No way that's legal. The answer is B. So I couldn't choose between the soap opera and the real answer. So I'm awarding a joint win here. Everyone, let's give both of them a follow on Twitter. That is at Bibby Henry, at B-I-B-Y-H-E-N-R-Y for Shelley. And for Dinosaur Ducky, that is at Dinosaur underscore Ducky, D-I-N-O-S-A-U-R underscore D-U-C-K-Y. Congratulations to both of you for being this week's winner, and enjoy your never-ending fame and fortune split two ways, which, due to the magic of infinity, is still never-ending fame and fortune.
And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening. I know that that's some tough stuff to deal with. We cannot let up. We cannot allow Republicans to take anything else, and we got to kick them out of everything they're in that we can, because that's horrible. But if it makes you feel any better, Sidney Powell is going to be disbarred. And if Andrew's wrong about that, better. We'll disbar him. No, not really. But all right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you for Rapid Response Friday.
I move for a bad court thingy.
You mean a mistrial?
Yeah. That's why you're the judge and I'm the law talking guy.
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it would be a big help if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/yodelmountain and follow us on Twitter at openargs. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, all rights reserved. It is produced with the assistance of transcriptionist Heather Loveridge, production assistant Ashley Smith, and additional contributions from Morgan Stringer and Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our live shows and heads up the OA Wiki. Follow at OA Wiki on Twitter. Additional thanks to the moderators of the Opening Arguments Facebook community, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian Ziegenhagen, and Teresa. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith, who edits the show and created the fabulous theme music, which was used with permission.
I'll stop because I hear there's a barking outside. I don't know if you can hear that or not.
Oh, it's been a hellscape of your neighbor using the saw or something, but God, we just got to live with it. No, there's nothing you can do about that.
Close to, hopefully close to having a soundproof.
I mean, you could murder your neighbor.
All right.
I mean,
all right.
I mean, I'm saying don't do that. Would be bad. Okay, don't, yeah. In the list of options.
This is recorded. Okay.
Anyway, yeah, but it's back. The option. I'm giving you the options, but it's but I'm saying don't do that one.
Right. Yeah, it would be foolish for me to do that.
Foolish. Okay.